Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. I got my ball cap on. The sky is Orioles orange, and we're having some fun here at Baltimore Positive. All of our coverage brought to you by our friends at State Fair, where hopefully we're going to be socially distanced, vaccinated, pulling the mask off by the time the Orioles get into a position for that September run. You can get your chicken and waffles over there, as well as shrimp and grits, and there's always some delicious beers on tap, and for my wife, a delicious orange crush on Sunday mornings over at State Fair. You get across the street to El Guapo, you can make yourself a margarita over there, work yourself some flautas and some tacos and some burritos. Big thanks to our friends over in the 21228 for the sponsorship. We hope to get back up there elbowing in for some margaritas at El Guapo. Our friends at Fadley's, this guest would probably be joining us at Fadley's for a delicious Baltimore City Eastern Shore crab cake. Our friends at Fadley's ship those crab cakes all over the world. Been talking to Damie, and I'm really, really interested because this next guest doesn't know what a role he's going to play in my crab cake eating and beer drinking adventures that are coming later on. Then I'm keeping a little close to the vest right now. Even Moeller doesn't know everything that's going on. But Don, I know you, this is a very special guest here, and not just because he's a fellow baseball fan, but his team actually wins World Series. So without further ado, they don't get to celebrate or hang out, but they did win.
And he likes to remind me of that. Very, very pleased to have. I guess the best way to describe our guest is by almost every measure described wherever you just simply Google Len Foxwell, and somewhere in that Google it's going to say one of Maryland's best political strategists. So Len, when all is said and done, on all the things you've accomplished, Mr. Len Foxwell, on that tombstone it's going to say one of Maryland's premier political strategists. Welcome to Baltimore Positive.
I hope to God that's what's on my tombstone, man, because if you do my Google News feed, all sorts of stuff comes up. I'm going to stick with one of Maryland's best political strategists, and I am very, very grateful not only for the opportunity but for the very kind lead-in to the show.
Next time I think about running for mayor, I'm going to find you, Len, all right?
You could do worse. He didn't like my advice, Len. He didn't like my advice at all.
I took his advice. I didn't run.
He kept coming back.
I took his advice in the end.
Right. He kept saying, I'm going to run. I said, you can't win. I'm going to run. You can't win.
So I could have won.
He didn't like my advice.
Could have won.
That's right. You could have won if you retained the services of who is Maryland's truly great political strategist, and that's Don Moeller. The most elite professional in the industry is sitting right here on this call.
You cannot employ a man who will work for free with his heart. You know what I mean?
Oh, my goodness. Hey, Len, tell folks a little bit. We love to, on Baltimore Positive, have folks, and we're going to get into your new venture, Tread Avon sure. Strategies, and what a tribute to that is to the Eastern Shore, and it taps into all of your skills. But tell folks a little bit. We like people who are listening to learn about our guests. Who is Len? Where did he grow up? How did this little guy who probably loved Little League and thought he was going to play shortstop for the Washington Senators end up being Maryland's premier
political
strategist?
There were no Washington Senators. He's not that old.
I never had the Washington Senators. I was born in 1970. It's a fun cue. Bob Short moved the Senators out of Washington down to Texas the following year. So I never saw a baseball game in D.C. until 2005 when the Expos franchise relocated to D.C. But first of all, thanks again, guys, for having me.
Who was your team then? Wait a minute. Who was your team then as a little kid?
I was a lifelong fan of the Oakland A's.
I hated the A's.
I'm sure you did. I mean, you were probably stung by the experiences of 1973 and 1974.
My father took me out there the day Catfish Hunter beat our ass. I mean, it was terrible. I still have the box. I still have it, you know? My dad kept score, you know?
I'm just going to get out of the way and let you all talk Oakland A's, Baltimore Orioles.
So I was a lifelong Oakland A's fan. And yes, Don, I didn't think I was going to play shortstop because I was a left-hander, but I did have designs on being a defensive specialist first baseman in the if not the Keith Hernandez mold, at least maybe in the poor man's mold, like a Jim Spencer type, right? And I'll never forget going to a Cincinnati Reds tryout camp when I was 16 years old. And this was back in the days when Major League franchises would actually have these roaming, traveling baseball camps that would be put together by that team's regional scout. And the Cincinnati Reds called a tryout camp at the old Wicomico High School baseball field down in Salisbury, right across from the Civic Center. So I went thinking that, you know, I'm a pretty good ball player. I'm hitting 280 in my Pony League team in a 3-month cold weather town.
Put me in, coach.
Put me in, coach. I mean, how could that not prepare me for a life, you know, climbing the rungs of professional baseball? So I go, and they had this kid on the mound who had just been drafted out of, I think it was one of the Ivy League schools. And he was throwing for the, throwing in this camp before he got assigned to the short league summer schedule. And I get into the box, left-handed, and I like to dig in, address the plate. First pitch is coming right from my face. I mean, I've never seen a pitch so hard. It actually made a sound as it went through the air. Comes from my face, and I'm hauling butt out of there. I'm down in the dirt, getting dust out of my teeth. And right behind me, I hear the whack of the catcher's mitt. The ball had broken right across the plate. Perfect slider. At that point, it was right at that point that I recognized I've hit my professional ceiling.
What's that movie, Len? You make me think of that movie where Clint Eastwood is the aging scout and he's going blind and he can tell whether it's a slider or a curveball by the
Trouble
sound.
With the Curve.
That is Trouble with the Curve. Trouble with the Curve that day.
Oh man, I thought I was done for, and all it was was a pretty good college boy slider, and so I decided my goal here is to not get hurt. I'm going to take my strikeout with dignity. I'm not even going to swing the bat. I'm not even going to do the whole John Kruk in the All-Star game against Randy Johnson thing. I'm just going to stand there, get my strikeout, go back into right field, and stop at Dairy Queen on the way home. And that was as far as I went.
And have a story to tell 30 years later, right?
And here I am still regaling you with my stories from my high school junior season.
But one
I
of my favorite
hit and run victory from Patterson Park last week on the air. So, you know, when you have any glory as a child playing baseball, you relive it, including when you strike out in game 7 and, you know, with the bases loaded, looking as I once did against Richie Pass. So you don't forget these things 40 years later.
Well, let's remember that Peter, Paul, and Mary reminded us that right field's a great place to be. So, you know,
I don't think I was out in right field because of my throwing arm, Bill. Okay, do not mistake me for Dewey Evans or Jesse Barfield. I was out there because we didn't have a lot of left-handed hitters in Dorchester County, and it was a safe option.
So Before I do politics, I just want to address the picture on the wall behind you because it's RFK Stadium. Most people think of that as a football stadium, usually, but I see the baseball config. I will say this, just as a person who's lived here forever, because I was born in 68, so I have no recollection of the Senators other than finding a couple of Ted Williams baseball cards. By the way, I have a beautiful Ted Williams autograph on an old Senators ticket that I hope to share with you at some point. But I'll say this, I was there the night it was open. My pal David Cope was working for the Nationals at the time, and I went down as often as I could in those couple of seasons just to experience baseball in that old place. And, you know, I saw a handful of games. I mean, that's probably something you may have never thought you were going to see, right? In the same way that for me in Baltimore, I mean, I was working at the paper when the Mayflowers took the Colts out of here. Just the fact that the Ravens exist is a little bit of a miracle. And to me, the fact that the Nationals ever existed is a little bit of a miracle. And, you know, I'll let you call back later and we'll talk about Angelos and Masson and money and antitrust, right? Because all of that's baked into it. I've written a book about it, but it is amazing, you know, that you had that experience, because I never thought I'd see a baseball game at RFK that wasn't the old Luke Appling home run in the Brooks Robinson old timers game, right?
In 1982, 75-year-old Luke Appling goes deep in the Cracker Jack old timers game. When I went to that game, and it was on April 14th, 2005, and Levon Hernandez pitches the Nats to victory in the first Major League Baseball game to be played in the District of Columbia since 1971. All I could think about, honestly, Nestor and Don, was my grandfather. And I never met my grandfather. He passed away in 1964, so 6 years before I was born. But he was a devout Washington Senators fan. And the only things I have from my grandfather are some of the old scorecards that he would keep. And through him, through his old scorecards, I learned about Mickey Vernon and the crafty Cuban hurler, Connie Marrero, and Jackie Jensen, who actually spent a couple of years over here in D.C., and Eddie Yost, the walking man. And I think about what he must have, how he would have felt to be without baseball for 33 years. And then what it must have, what it would have felt like for him to have the, have Major League Baseball come home to the nation's capital. And even though it was the first game I'd ever seen in Washington, D.C., that family connection, to be honest, made it a very emotional experience for me. Well, and it was it was also even more meaningful because I had been at the Greater Washington Board of Trade when the team, when the announcement was made that the Expos franchise was coming to D.C., and we had to work to get the ballpark financing legislation through a lame duck D.C. City Council. And to this day, it was the hardest I've ever worked on a single piece of legislation. I probably shouldn't tell my new clients that, but I have never worked harder on anything than I have on that bill to get 7 votes so that the team would stay and we could actually have baseball as a permanent fixture in our nation's capital.
Disappointed Mr. Angelos in the beginning, then he got the check. So certainly here in Baltimore, as I have Camden Yards, I have other visions of Camden Yards, like the one where it looks like it's on fire, the one where it looks like the sun's setting, but I'm going with hope here today. How about that, Mole? Are you happy?
I absolutely am happy, as I tell you.
It's spring.
Good days are ahead. I will be calling Mr. Foxwell one day in a couple of years when I'm sitting at the World Series with my grandsons and taking it all in.
He's a dreamer, Len. He's a dreamer.
Len, when did how did this little left-handed first baseman, and I know along with baseball, when I think of Len Foxwell, I think of, you know, there are certain things that are real loves to him. Obviously, your family, your kids, baseball, Salisbury University. I mean, you are a seagull, right? You're a seagull through and through.
Seagull till I die, my friend.
Till I know
you're Steve Pisciotti, absolutely
big time seagull. When did this left-handed first baseman, Salisbury Seagull, start to think, you know, this politics thing, kind of like it? How did that develop, Len?
So my family was in politics. My mother was a cog, and I think she would be okay if I use that term. It's not pejorative. She was a worker in the old Fred Malkus Democratic political machine down on the Eastern Shore. And For those of us on this call of a certain age, Fred Malkus, the former longtime state senator from Dorchester County, was the kingpin of local Democratic politics down here, as state senators tended to be back in their home communities back in the day. And so she was the type who, anytime there was a spaghetti dinner out at the Legion Hall, she would be there. And she was never the front person, but she'd always be back there in the kitchen, you know, fixing the meals and clearing the tables. And on election day, she'd be out working to get the vote out and all that. And so she really did pass on to me a love of politics, really from a very early age. I mean, from the time I was 6, 7, 8 years old. First campaign I ever worked on was for someone, Don, that I know that you will remember, a guy named Porter Hopkins. He was actually the House Minority Leader in the House of Delegates from Baltimore County, but he happened to be, despite our partisan difference, he happened to be a good family friend. And so when he ran for Congress in 1982 in the Republican primary against Bob Bauman, who was attempting a comeback at the time, jumped on board, and I lit envelopes, and I leafleted flyers in the parking lots. I went to spaghetti dinners and shook hands with people, and I had all sorts of fun. And that was really my early exposure to politics. And then fast forward a few years, I had an opportunity when I was working in the newsroom of the Eastern Star Democrat to join the new administration of Governor Paris Glendening as his eyes and ears on the Eastern Shore. And that started me on the path for what would become a 26-year gig in government and politics and hopefully counting.
Boy, there were some, you know, Len, you mentioned the Glendening administration. I think of some real superstars, and you'll name others, but I hadn't thought of this till you just said the Glendening connection. But I think of some of the brightest political people I've ever come across. Ann Beagle, John Willis. I mean, go down the list. I mean, that was a powerhouse of political strategists down there.
Well, think about this, Don. Glendening, in his wisdom, took all of his top young political people. He called them his shiny brights. He put us down in the Maryland Secretary of State's office under the tutelage of John Willis. So John was kind of our guru, right? And I think about the political talent in that back room of the Jeffrey Building in Annapolis, where I would sit next to Sushant Sid, who's now not only my business partner, but one of the lobbyists in Maryland, and Ken Allman, who, as we know, has gone on to much bigger, much better things. Don and Nestor, I always say it like this. You remember those rookie cards that you would get in the Topps bubblegum packs where they would
maybe
have
you get
like
a Bob Baylor, maybe you get a Drungo Hazewood, maybe you get a Jim Fuller. You never know.
Right. So you would have like the rookie cards where you would have like two people who really went on to do great things, and then the Drungo Hazewood or Bob Bonner or one of those who never quite panned out. I always say that Sushant and Ken were the rookie card guys who went on to greatness, and then I was the third wheel.
But I mean, that's an amazing group of people when you mention, you know, Sushant and Ken Allman and yourself and Ann Beagle. Listen, I know people had mixed feelings about Governor Glenn Denning, like my former boss, who I was very close to and extremely fond of. Yeah, I think Governor Glenn Denning was also not known as the warmest and fuzziest of guys. But what lessons did you and that young gang take away from Governor Glenn Denning that serve you well today, Len?
So when I think about my time with the Glenn Denning administration, three things come to mind. One is the fact that being there and being present is 75% of the political game. And you're right, Don. He's known today and thought of in past tense as an introvert. But people forget that Paris Glenn Denning was actually one of the best traveled politicians ever to hold the office. I mean, his political outreach to every corner of the state was remarkable. If you remember, he won the 1994 race against Ellen Sauerbrei by only 5,991 votes. So he recognized coming into Bill Clinton's second term, facing a likely rematch against Ellen Sauerbrei, what would probably be a down year for Democrats, he had to get out there and make up some lost ground in those rural and outer suburban communities that he had really taken a bath in 1994. And so my first couple of years with Glenn Denning, I put over 200,000 miles on the car because he was always in Salisbury and Elkton. And I even had a little bit of Harford County, up to Havre de Grace and Bel Air.
Beautiful state,
traveling
isn't it?
It's an amazing state. So, the first thing I learned is that you have to be there. And I carried that lesson forward to my relationship with my former boss, who, whether we like Peter French or however, he has people who feel different ways because he's a politician. No one can deny that the guy has traveled out to all 24 jurisdictions of the state and forged deep relationships in both rural, urban, Democratic, and Republican areas.
Well, you're going to be very humble on that, and that's very nice of you. But it's interesting. There's the connection, Nestor. The lessons that Len Foxwell learned as a young staffer for Governor Glenn Denning, fast forward to the outreach that Comptroller Francho instituted across the state. There's no doubt that what the mastermind behind that, Len, was you, and putting that together to get the comptroller out there. So that was, that you see your fingerprint as you did.
Well,
on,
I would say
go
part
ahead,
of that, you have to have a candidate that wants to do it, right? I mean, you have to want to get in the car and go out to Deep Creek Lake and find value in doing it. There's no quick way to get there. You have to enjoy it. You have to like people, right? I mean, literally.
You have to either like the experience or you have to recognize its value to the outcome. And I believe to this day that Governor Glenn Denning, really looking back on it, he probably, as an introvert, didn't relish the thought of getting into a car on a freezing January morning and driving out to Cumberland to talk to the folks at the Kelly Tire plant or at Fort Hill Elementary School. But he recognized that politics is a game of addition and multiplication, and any day in which you are not building your political base is a lost day.
Well, that's that point, Nestor, that point that Len just made about being an introvert. And again, if you're just joining us, we are with Len Foxwell, longtime political guru in Maryland, deputy comptroller for the state of Maryland, former Paris Glenn Denning staffer, and currently the is it CEO, Len? Is that the title? I know it's Tread Avon Strategies. What's your title there?
I just call myself the founder and principal. I'm a staff of one.
Founder and principal and staff of one.
Well, you said Tread Avon. You made me Google that. I had to figure it. You know, I knew you were Eastern Shore, and I never really knew the Nationals thing because I thought, why isn't that dude an Orioles fan? And then I realized you like yellow polyester. I hope you read the Charlie O book as well. But, you know, I guess for all of this in the background, I've driven those roads, right? Like, I mean, I've driven back and forth to Ocean City 1,000 times, St. Michael's, and I think about, you know, Harold Baines on the baseball side, but where you were. But seeing the part of the world you're from, I can honestly say I've never really made a right-hand turn past St. Michael's where the airport is. I didn't even really know there was water over there.
Quite a bit of water. And people ask me, why Tread Avon? In fact, I even incorporated this section into my website. What is the meaning of the name Tread Avon? Well, it's a tributary of the Chesapeake Bay, and it's our most prominent and most beautiful picturesque waterways in Talbot County. And obviously we are a community whose culture and economy is based upon our waterfront access. I think Talbot County has something like 600 miles of uninterrupted shoreline, and the boating, water skiing, resort living is so important to our economy. But here's another thing. 5 years ago, we had a desperate need here in Talbot County to start a viable youth recreation soccer program because the county, to be completely candid, just wasn't getting it done. It was being poorly run. And so I got together with the CEO of the YMCA here, who's a dear friend of mine, Robbie Gill. And I said, we can do better, and we really have to do better by our kids. So from that, we created a business model based on a travel soccer experience at rec league prices. And we didn't brand it as a YMCA product. We branded it instead as FC Tread Avon. And so it was a blend of the local, plus it had kind of a high sounding English European sounding name that might attract, you know, the soccer aficionados. So it just
sounds better than FC Easton.
Probably so.
Yeah.
And so to this day, it's a successful program. We have over 700 kids who play every spring and fall. So when I was thinking about the name for the new firm, Tread Avon, both as a part of our community and for me personally, carries great meaning. And
they got crabs in that water?
Oh, absolutely. The best crabs in the best crabs on earth, man. You know that.
Where's the best place to get a crab cake?
I knew you were going to go there, and you were going to tell Len, you were going to make him go out on a limb and say, if he had one crab cake to eat, where would it be?
On the Eastern Shore. Even if your favorite one's on this side, I need an Eastern Shore best crab cake.
Eastern Shore best crab cake. I'm going to go with Fisherman's Inn.
That's barely on Eastern
Shore. In Queen Anne's County.
You like that better than the Narrows? You like that better than the Narrows, Len?
I think we're talking about razor thin margins, but I will say the best crab cake in the state, and I'm gonna make a lot of people upset here what I'm about to say.
You always do when you say that. When you say best crab cake, you make everybody angry.
Here we go. Box Hill Pizzeria in Harford County. You would not think that a place that brands itself is a pizza joint in Harford County would actually be home to one of the best, if not the best, crab cakes in Maryland. But there you have it. I haven't had a better one.
I'm going to have my feet off the pier with Moeller and walk over to the Fisherman's. What I'm going to do, get me a big fat one,
right.
Watch the sunset. How about
right
that?
Next door, walking,
and a
distance.
Cold local craft beer, Fox. Well, how about that?
Walking distance, and we have a special place in our heart for our Miss Nancy Devine, who we call the godmother of crab cakes, who really came up with the jumbo lump crab cake at Fadley's many, many years ago. It's a great topic of discussion. Hey, Len, back to Tread Avon. So you're working with great guys at Capital Strategies. I mean, everybody down in Annapolis knows Shushant and David Carroll and the whole group there. I mean, just great folks, been around a long time. What's your role and what's Tread Avon? What's the niche that when you're sitting down, your elevator speech with clients, what's Len Foxwell bringing to the dance?
Sure. So I appreciate you asking. This is my elevator speech. So Tread Avon Strategies is focused on three particular spaces: communications, advocacy, and political consulting. or if you want to break it down even simpler, the three C's: corporations, causes, and candidates. And I got to say, Don, I didn't know what to expect. I announced my firm. You and I talked about it before we officially launched. I announced my new firm on December 16 with a Facebook post and had my website go live. And I was dreading the idea of having a Spinal Tap moment where I go live and then absolutely nothing happens.
The phone doesn't ring. Where is everybody?
I get no emails. And I'm just sitting here. I'm just sitting here looking at this phone, wondering what's wrong with the phone. And I just have to say, without getting into too many details, that I have been very blessed that that has not occurred, and that the response has been very, very positive. And I got to say, I'm working harder than I ever have. I've learned something about the private sector that I didn't know from government work, that Fridays, weekends, and holidays mean nothing. Those are just other days to talk to clients and to make a few dollars. And I've never been happier. I honestly feel 10 years younger now than I did this time last year.
Well, that's true. What are some things, if you can talk about them, you don't need to get into the weeds, but what are a couple things that you're working on that really have a little giddy up in your step?
Sure. Well, I'm working for a terrific guy named Tim Adams. And I think you've interviewed him on Baltimore Positive. He's the current mayor of Bowie. He's running for comptroller of Maryland right now. And if he is fortunate to be elected in 2022, he would be the first Black comptroller in our state's history. And he would be the first independently elected Black member of the Maryland Board of Public Works, which, as you know, is the three-person spending panel that approves virtually every contract that goes out to vendors in the state of Maryland. So that's where the money and the wealth of the taxpayers actually get spent in Maryland. And the comptroller is the critical swing vote between the governor and the state treasurer, who is elected by the legislature. So it's a highly influential office. Tim, as a CEO in his own right, a defense contractor who has intimate familiarity with the procurement process at the federal level, would come into office as the single most qualified person ever to hold the position. And I think he'd be qualified to make a difference on day one. Another client I'm working for that has me really excited is NRG Energy. And this is a company that's based in Texas, but they have offices throughout the East Coast. And we're currently involved in a legislative initiative, and I'm doing some outreach and coalition building for NRG on this front to allow Marylanders to have a truly competitive retail market where they can shop for and buy the best package for them and their families at the most reasonable prices. And that was supposed to be the intent of the 1999 deregulation bill that, Don, you're familiar with from your days in Baltimore County. On many levels, that promise was never fulfilled. 8 out of 10 Marylanders right now just go with their regulated utility because they don't even know that they have an option. And we're trying to change that. We believe competition, not monopolies, leads to better price, better service, and more revenue that can be reinvested into sustainable energy and other priorities. So those are just two things that I can advertise on here, and there are others. And I'm going to be adding another client, I think, this weekend. And so the business just continues to grow.
Well, good for you, Nestor. As Len talks, I said, we have a long history. I'm sure there's people out there going, wait a minute. Don Mower and Len Foxwell are talking. They seem to have a good relationship. And there are people out there scratching their head going, Wait a minute, those guys played for different teams. And Len and I had moments where we were very much on different teams. But I would say through that, we always maintained our civility and maintained our friendship. In the midst of all the chaos, we actually even attended a ball game or two along the way. But Nestor, Len and I had, you talk about, yeah, people say, yeah, two political whizzes, Don Mower and Len Foxwell, had this great idea one day. I can see Len starting to laugh already. You'll love this one, Nestor. So we have this brilliant idea. We're people, folks, and we can bring people together. And Len and I say, you know what, this feud between Peter Francho and Kevin Kamenetz, it's gone on long enough. We'll be able to bring them
together. What was the root of the feud, just to play, you guys are playing inside poker here. The audience is like, huh?
Well, we have different take on the future. I would, I'll simplify it and say that my boss felt that Controller Francho was coming into Baltimore County and trying to gin up an issue regarding air conditioning schools when the county, we felt from our perspective, was well on our way to rectifying schools with air conditioning, that we had a $1.2 billion program that grew to a $1.8 billion program in place. And we thought that the controller was using the issue for his own political gain. And Len will give you, I'm going to say Len, give you the other side of the story, as Paul Harvey would say.
I'm going to actually go further back in time. The true root of the feud between the Lake County executive, who I personally held in very, very high regard despite our political differences, and the comptroller, it actually started in the closing days of the 2010 race for Baltimore County executive. And I can barely remember the issue now, but there was some controversy surrounding Joe Bartenfelder and a bag of collard greens or something. And it's all fuzzy right now, but Bartenfelder was running against Kamenetz. And in the closing days of that race, Bartenfelder, who was coming under fire, and he had served on the House Appropriations Committee with Peter Francho way back in the day. And Peter came out with a strong statement of support for Councilman Bartenfelder. Fast forward a couple days, Don, the Reisterstown Parade, that's always Labor Day weekend, right?
Or
that's
the week before Labor Day. Founders Day.
The Reisterstown Parade, then Councilman Kamenetz comes up and aggressively comes up to Peter and says, "Why are you coming into this county and getting involved in my race?" And he put his finger on Peter's chest. And that's just the way Kevin Kamenetz did politics. I mean, he was a take no prisoners politician.
That sounds about right.
and Peter was kind of taken aback by the whole nature of the exchange, but that started the two men down a track from which, honestly, they never recovered. Before they had, they defined each other negatively before they even had the chance to meet and define one another positively. It was just a damn shame because both of them were remarkably talented people of conscience and conviction, and it's just a shame.
So Len and I have this brilliant idea, right? The two wizards. So this will be fine. We'll get them for breakfast. And when we get them over some pancakes and eggs, or in Kevin's case, it would have been oatmeal and raisins. We'll over a cup of coffee, it'll all be fine. So Len and I he comes down to Panera Bread on York Road with the controller, and I'm there with the county executive. And thank God, Len, when I look back, I think it's you, the controller, me, and the county executive, and maybe the people who worked there. It was early. There was like nobody at Panera Bread, thank goodness, that morning. I'm going to let you go first this time to talk about how that breakfast rapidly went downhill.
So Don had it right. He called me because we were having this thing with the air conditioning issue, and this would have been back in 2011. Peter had written this letter to then Superintendent Joe Hairston saying, how come 50,000 kids in Baltimore County are still without air conditioning? And we go back and forth, and we had a very eventful meeting at the Board of Public Works that Don probably remembers. And so Don, in his own consensus-seeking style, calls and says, "Hey, there's nothing here that can't be solved over breakfast. Let's at least, before this thing gets out of hand, let's at least try to put these two people together and see if we can have a bagel."
So when Baldwin tries to get me and the Angelos together, it will be breakfast. Okay.
Always trying, right? And so we meet at Panera Bread on York Road, right up on the line, right down from Channel 2. And Peter gets, it's the first time I can remember in the 10 years I've been working with him at that point, that Peter was actually on time. And the county executive was running a few minutes behind. So the county executive comes in. There are probably six people in the restaurant. Kevin knows each and every one of them. So he takes his time walking through walking through the dining room. And meanwhile, I could just see Peter doing a slow burn, just getting hotter and hotter. They finally sit down. I could barely get my cinnamon crunch bagel in my mouth, in which they just start going at it. And
he starts, Len. I do have to say, I remember this, and you said you remember it like it's yesterday. They start to get into it because I don't think the waitress had even poured our coffee.
No.
When my boss leans across the table and revisits the Reisterstown parade and says to the controller, "I want you to stay out of my county." I think that's how we began breakfast.
He said, Peter was thinking about running for governor in that cycle. Kevin says, "I have people coming in to my county asking for my support, and you are doing everything possible to come into my county and antagonize me." And Peter gets his back up and says, "It's not your county. Right. It belongs to the people." I was like, oh, God. It was like, and so then eventually they remember this time, they stand up. They stand up and they are like looking each other head to head. It's almost like one of these pre heavyweight fight press conferences where they're going nose to nose. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to go at it. And frankly, my money's on Kevin because he's just younger and meaner. and Don and I are having to pull our respective principles apart. Don takes Kevin one way and I take Peter the other way. And so I'm driving back to Annapolis, and I'm pulled over at that Exxon in Glen Burnie. I get a call. It's Moeller saying, "Well, I don't know where you got that idea from, Foxhole, but back to the drawing board."
I said, "Oh,
did you get some hazelnut cream cheese or anything?" I mean,
we never made it to breakfast. On the way to the car, I just remember turning to the county executive and saying, "Well, that could have gone better."
Well, so the other thing was, I mean, Len, you guys got really screwed because you had to drive a long way. He only had to drive like another mile back to the office, right?
Oh yeah, this was an 8:30 meeting. I mean, yeah. So Don's 5 minutes away. The county executive is probably 15, 20 minutes. Peter has a driver, for heaven's sake. I'm the poor schlub who has to get up, you know, at the crack of dawn and come here from Easton for this.
That was a moment.
The fisherman's on the way home and get a crab cake, probably. Len Foxwell is here, along with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, telling old literal war stories.
That was awesome.
That was a moment in the Foxwell Moeller relationship. Hey, Len, fast forward. You've been gracious with your time. We're going to have to run here in a minute or two. You know the state better than anybody, and particularly its finances, having been seeped in that stuff in the controller's office. Give us sort of an overview of where you see the state now in terms of its health, both emotionally and fiscally, and where you see it's heading.
Well, Don, I appreciate the question. You know, I think it's noteworthy that the state has actually weathered the fiscal consequences of the COVID pandemic better than many other states have. And it's a combination of our natural bankable assets, i.e. our proximity to Washington and the federal government, which always provides us with something of an economic backstop in times of turmoil. But also, we have a remarkable private sector workforce here. And one of the things that we noticed when we were doing our revenue forecast in the comptroller's office before I left is that we weren't drawing down on the unemployment account to the extent that we thought we would have. And that is attributable to the fact that so many employers, even to their own financial disadvantage, kept their employees on the payroll. I mean, they took the hit in order to keep their employees gainfully employed, being able to provide for their families and everything. So a combination of federal support, our proximity, and just the qualities of our private sector have served us quite well. I think still in terms of our business climate, Don, we're leaving a lot of runners on base. I think there's so much more that we could be doing to support our small business community. And you look at things like, for example, the lack of direct support that has gone directly into the pockets of small business owners that are, they're just trying to keep the doors open, maintain, you know, provide for their employees and support other vendors and small businesses. I think we have a procurement system in the state of Maryland that could be worked in a way to provide more opportunities for small and emerging entrepreneurs. And even on the financial advisory side, I think that we, our $54 billion pension system could be doing a lot more to A, invest in local economic initiatives that would see a return on investment for the pension subscriber, as well as supporting, providing opportunities for young, emerging, minority and women-owned investment fund managers. So I think we have good economic bones. I just think that I think in the years ahead, once we get through this crisis, we're going to have to redouble our focus on what we do to grow and sustain our small business economy.
Fantastic. Hey, before we let you run, one of the articles that I read said this is the year that the pitchers return to the nation's capital. Is this the year that the pitchers return to the nation's capital?
You mean the pitchers as in the Nationals?
The Nationals pitchers. Are they back? Are they full steam ahead?
I think they just collectively took a year off last year. It was just a strange year. I mean, look, I mean, I'm not Pollyannish. I know the Mets, you know, doubled down and made some big investments in the offseason. The Braves are still the team to beat in the National League East, and the Phillies are competitive, and you know, even, my God, the Miami Marlins. But anytime you can go into a three-game set with a front line rotation of Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin, and now with a refurbished bullpen with Brad Hand from Cleveland on the back end, I'm going to take our chances anytime. Honestly,
Do you watch all 162? Do you miss any?
What's that?
Do you watch all 162 this year?
I can't do every single game just because of professional obligations. But I will say I do. If I'm not sitting down watching, I am recording. I'll come home and sit down and watch it before I go to bed. I mean, honestly, for me, it's my happy place. I can shut down for 3 hours and tune out the problems of the day and just focus on nothing but the game. And without it, I just don't know what I'd do.
Well, you know, I know you love Camden Yards as well. Camden Yards to me is indeed the shrine. I mean, I think there's nothing like it. I'm excited to see that you're actually thinking about some upgrades. But
that's why I brought it here for you, Don. That's why.
There you go. But I know Oriole fans get angry with me when I say, but I actually like the National Stadium, Len. I like the way it's opened up. I know it doesn't look like much from the outside, but I like the views, Nestor, from the inside. I love the way the concessions interact with the field. I think there's a lot to like. And
I like that it's off the freeway and easy to get to. I mean, I'll say that.
What's your feeling about the stadium, Len?
Two things. First, I agree with you that that kind of neoclassical style doesn't necessarily translate for a ballpark the way it translates to our federal buildings in the nation's capital. But I will say it is arguably the most functional ballpark in the majors. It's not the most beautiful, but it's the most functional. And I will just say that open concourses rank right up there as one of the greatest inventions ever produced by man. The fact that I can go hit the men's room or stand in line at the concession stand, go grab a beer and still look back and watch the game on the field. That's something that we don't have at Camden Yards just because Camden Yards was built in a time before that became an engineering option. And you kind of feel when you're walking the concourses at Camden Yards, you kind of feel like you're removed from the field of play. And that alone makes Nats Park such a good ballpark experience.
I totally agree. And I do think that perhaps as part of the negotiations, the stadium negotiations, and again, Nestor, I know you had a detailed talk with Marty Conway, but I suspect that the addition of open concourses and some major renovations are coming to Camden Yards, which will add to the whole evidently mass entertainment venue that they're trying to create there. So Len, I hope we can have you back on periodically sort of as our political analyst and our baseball guru and keep us updated on Tread Avon strategies. Nothing but good things.
All right. We did crab cakes in this one. We're going to do beer in the next one. How about that?
Nice. Hey, and Don, tell Jake I said hi, will you, buddy?
I will do. He's very excited young man. He got accepted They had wanted him to come. It's going to be new for me because I'm a public school guy. But they've convinced him to come play ball at Gilman in the fall, man, as a ninth grader. So he's going to be playing basketball and baseball for Gilman. So I guess we'll all be Greyhounds as well as Comets now.
I can't wait to see his progression. Guys, thanks again for all of this. I appreciate it.
Len, we appreciate having you on, and we'll come back and a little baseball talk with you here as things go. I have a feeling things are going to go better for you this year than they are for Don. So Len Foxwell joining us here. Don will get his retort in. We are doing a weekly segment now called The Recon, where Don and I get together and sometimes argue baseball, sports, politics, life, pandemic, and probably crab cakes and beer before the summer's over as well. Big thanks to our friends over at Fadley's, where they do serve those crab cakes and beer. Damien and I got into about whether I ate oysters the other day. I'm like, of course I eat oysters. So, but yes, and they have oysters over at Fadley's as well. So, oysters also a big part of the Bay. I'll continue with some education there for Chesapeake Bay recovery and all that good stuff as well. I am Nestor. He is former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller. You may find either one of us over at State Fair or over at El Guapo, our other sponsors, as well as Moeller and Gary Realty. Jeff Moeller is going to be listed in my condo here this summer. We'll be bringing him on as well. Find all of our conversations with the Maryland Hospital Association folks from LifeBridge and MedStar and incredible miracle workers behind the scenes on this vaccine and on all things COVID and getting through this pandemic. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.